Ready, sir.
Clark.
Good evening, sir.
How are you? Did you check in that fella?
Yes, sir. I'm going to see him at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning.
The man himself?
No, the number two man. I called him, and he said that he'd been handling it. He had the material. He was going away for the weekend, and I said, could I come in tomorrow and get the material and read it while he was gone, and then he'd be available for us to talk just as soon as he got back, perhaps on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was hoping that the other man would want to talk to you about other things.
Well,
he talked to Ken O'Donnell and Larry O'Brien, told them to think it over and think about it. He talked about McNamara and Mac Bundy. He was very warm when he talked to, rather pleased when he talked to Mac Bundy. He talked to McNamara later in the afternoon. McNamara suggested that he indicate by a statement that he didn't care to be vice president. He said, no, that wasn't up. He wasn't ready to do that, and he didn't know, and kind of kicked up his heels. Where's McNamara? Good deal. And also, where's Mac Bundy? He just left here. Said he'd been on the phone all afternoon. No, we haven't called. I tried to call Daly, and they don't have his number. It's closed out there. I haven't called anyone. I'm a little bit hesitant while he's thinking it over to be calling people, telling them what I've done. On the other hand, I should want him calling, and he can be doing it and showing up things and so on and so forth.
Did you have any understanding with him about the amount of time he was going to have?
No, none whatever. He just said he wanted to think it over, and we'd say about it. But both of them, Bundy and McNamara, told him it's all over town, and he's told several.
Uh-huh.
And Ken O'Donnell and Larry O'Brien said that one thing, sure, that if there's any Catholic or Shriver, that he'd never forgive it or forget it, or any of them, including Jackie. They just think it's got to be Catholic, it's got to be him, and that he's the best Catholic, and he's not any half Catholic like most of them, and that if it's Shriver, well, it's an insult because it's his brother-in-law. They really cut each other up there. They even said the girl would practically leave him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think there's a good deal to that. There's been a very strong feeling about that all along. I think that that's one of the reasons that Shriver really cannot be very seriously considered, because I think that there's no use adding insult to it, and I think they would consider that to be a personal insult, and I think there'd be some justification for that.
They think Stevenson's too old, these boys do. They think that Humphrey talks a lot, and but that from the Midwest standpoint, that there is justification for not having Dodd or Bobby or Ribicoff or Muskie from the northern standpoint, if you're trying to get border states and Midwest. I never got in the South because I didn't want them to lay it on to the South, and I'm afraid they'd blame the South, say Mississippi didn't want him. I kept it always on Midwest and border.
I think I'd give him tomorrow, Thursday, to reach a conclusion. This is not a very complex problem. He can think about it this evening. He should be ready with some kind of answer tomorrow. And I don't know, but what you haven't heard from him by the middle of the day tomorrow, I think you might consider the possibility of your checking in with him and saying that you fear the matter's going to get out. It'd be more dignified if it came out from him or you or both of you together, something of that kind. I think there should be a move on it. In addition to that, I continue to believe that the follow-up should take place. Some of those, like Dick Daly and Dave Lawrence and so forth, and Pat Brown and Mayor Wagner, that you've been in touch with, or as soon as some kind of announcement's made, why, then there ought to be a phone call.
Before announcement or afterward?
Afterward.
You think I ought to refuse to call him tomorrow?
Well, no, I think that
I've already called Dick Daly, but I can't reach him.
Yeah, well, my notion is that the announcement should come out tomorrow. And I'm suggesting, if you haven't heard by noon time, why, then maybe called him saying that you think it ought to come out. Now, if he lags behind this situation, and I think it's very likely he probably leaves no alternative but for you to check in with some of the key men. That doesn't violate any kind of an agreement of any kind. You can inform them in confidence of what the situation is, because he's had all afternoon, and now he's had this evening to think about only one thing, and that is how it should be announced. At least ostensibly, that's all he's thinking about. I do not believe that there's any place really for him to turn or any place for him to go now. I think the conditions that prompted his attitude today are of sufficient strength that they will continue to prompt his attitude. But I think he should come up with it soon, and I think you can say out of courtesy to him that the matter's getting hotter all the time, and you believe the announcement should be made.
Mm-hmm. Now, he's got his friends, the life men, town. I told you that Luce wrote in the letter and said he wanted to be thorough and accurate, and I said, how can you be thorough and accurate when you haven't talked to the one that's got the figures? He came in, Abe sat down and said, now, what is it you want to say, and let me give you the figures. They said, we're here to do nothing except to get any extra material you want to give us. And he said, well, can you tell me what you're saying? No, he can't go into any of that. I said, can you tell me what you're reviewing on the financial situation? Mr. Luce said you said they had a bunch of bank stocks and they don't own any. No, he said, we can't give you any of that. We just want to receive whatever you want to give us. So Abe called back now and says he's talking procedure. He's talking nothing substantive. We know what's in the story, and I'd say a dozen things, and 10 of them are outright to fabrications by political enemies, which have been done through the years a good deal, but the rehash of old lies, and I suggest to Abe, and he thinks it might be all right to say to them, now, we've had a good many stories about, one of the men that read this story told me what's in it, and we've had a good many rumors here about what's going to be said coming out the week of the convention. And I am perfectly willing to go by and see the president with you this evening after his dinner. Mm-hmm. And he will tell you what he's heard and what his views are on it. Not for attribution, so you may know the truth if you want the truth, and if you want the truth contrasted with what other people have told you, because he ought to be in a position to know about it. And then bring them by and let me just hand them a financial statement and say, here is all I have. This is the whole truth. Now, this 17 million stuff is all fabricated. And here are the truth on the rumors that we've heard. What do you think about that?
Well,
there are five of them. Two editors, one or two writers, one supervisor.
I think it's worth a try. I don't believe it's likely to get anywhere any more than we made any real progress when the Star was writing its story, because that's the kind of stuff you give them takes all the guts out of the story from their standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I believe what you may want to be doing, just to get ready for it. I doubt that much can be done to control their story. If the story breaks, then we want to read it and carefully analyze it and reach the conclusion. If we think that the story really hurts, then take one course of action. If we think the story doesn't hurt, let it go. If the story hurts, then I think we might possibly consider the president having a statement prepared.
You see nothing wrong, though, with seeing them tell them what you've heard and what the answers are to it.
I would think that's all.
The truth is very good in all of these instances.
Yeah.
There's not any... I have a friendship. I know a man had a heart attack at his house. Therefore, I'm responsible for all of the work that he's done and all the contracts he's gotten, and I've never been responsible for one. I never discussed the one with anyone. And didn't even know that he had a good many of them. And 90% of his stuff's all over the world and is private, not public. time, there's not any evidence anywhere, any time, that I had it. One of them is I got him a great dam, and the dam that he got below bed, led by a state board of the state of Texas, before I ever was elected to office, and before I ever knew him. You see, but in a campaign, they said, this man's a great friend. So they picked up these clippings, you see, and they put that in line.
I reiterate what we discussed briefly this morning. I do not consider it one of the serious issues in the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
A great deal of it's discounted. I've been unable to find a single person who was affected adversely as a result of that star story.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get uglier and tougher than that, but the American people have a great understanding of the kind of crap that gets printed during election campaigns. They discount a great deal of that. If we think that it's got elements in it that hurt, then in a perfectly dignified way, with a very dignified, short, readily understandable statement, the president can give out one statement on it and then let it go at that.
Okay, good man.
You bet.